Okay, it's time to talk wheels. It's the Car Guy Show with automotive consumer tips, industry updates, interviews, and enthusiast news. If you care about cars, this show's for you. Now you're tuned in, so let's get tuned up with your host. Here he is, Steve Ford, the Car Guy.
Hello and welcome to another segment of the Car Guys Show here, coming at you from the broadcast tower of News Talk 990 KTMS and at the speed of light on the World Wide Web. We're connecting you to automotive consumer and enthusiast news, insights, and interviews anywhere you're hearing our signal in Santa Barbara and the surrounding communities. In today's program, the topic we're going to put up on the lift is Back to the Future, and a future that is destined to arrive in dealerships straight ahead. Hydrogen-powered vehicles coming to a showroom near you in 2015. When we come back from the folks who make these reports possible, we're going straight over to Toyota's national headquarters in Torrance, California, to swoop in for a close-up discussion about what the reality is for hydrogen machines in 2015. You're tuned into the Car Guys Show on News Talk 990 KTMS. We'll be right back.
In the old-time movies, you used to see an automobile junkyard as a place with rusty old wrecks and big cranes scrapping obsolete machines. Those days were black and white, and today's a world of digital full color. And in the new era of the green car, Steelhead Auto Recycling is at the leading edge of used auto parts. As new and future cars approach 100% recyclability, more than 70% of even older car and truck parts find new life as they come back in service at Steelhead Auto Recyclers, which means huge savings for you. You'll save on major parts such as engines and transmissions, but you can also repair and refresh your wheels with money-saving body trim and accessory parts, from hubcaps to glass, doors, fenders, taillights, and accessories. With a full-service counter and national parts search power and the new self-service section at Steelhead Auto Recycling, you'll save both ways. Plus the security of a full 90-day warranty on all parts. Digital on the web at buyused.net or analog by phone at 683-8557. That's 683-8557. Steelhead Auto Recycling.
When it comes to keeping your wheels looking like new, the majority of auto glass businesses have state-of-the-art tools and equipment. What is harder to find are the industry-certified craftspeople and the highest levels of service. Tri-County Auto Glass. Rock chip repairs or glass replacement with lifetime repair credit, a positive word-of-mouth reputation may bring you in. Courtesy, quality, and that new window glass shine will bring you back. Tri-County Auto Glass, downtown Santa Barbara, 963-6200. That's 963-6200.
Hey, you know about getting the job done right. If you want it done right, do it yourself. Well, that's what car and truck buffs, owners of classics, custom cars, and wise consumers know when they visit Daily Car Bath, Santa Barbara's downtown coin-operated car wash supercenter for more than 40 years. After discovering Daily Car Bath for my own cars, I've returned to give my machines the superior wash and cleaning care that all car buffs appreciate. At Daily Car Bath, you'll find premium hog's hair wash brushes with conditioned soft water and five stalls with foaming high sudsing auto shampoo that literally floats debris off your vehicle's finish, along with consistent high pressure washing and available non-acid low pressure wheel and tire cleaner. And for that special finish, DINI spot free rinse to help dissolve and eliminate mineral spot, and spray wax formulated with clear coat protectant included in the cycle. See why Daily Car Bath is known as the place where customers send their friends. And take it from a fellow car buff, when it comes to the best in car care appearance, you'll find it all at Daily Car Bath, open 24 hours a day at the corner of Anna Kappa and Coda Streets. Quality, economy, and that showroom shine. All right. In the midst of the great debate about relying on crude oil, no matter where it comes from or how, what about the other alternative fuel that was there before dinosaurs? Hydrogen. It's everywhere and in everything, and it's about to be the single fuel for several new production vehicles. And that's the topic up on the lift here on the Car Guys Show, here on News Talk 990 KTMS for today. Where are we going in the 21st century with the automobile? If you are somebody who has ever read Popular Mechanics, Popular Science, Scientific American, or any one of those many publications that float the what if and what could be, and the artist's renderings or the animations of what could be in the future,
The idea of driving an automobile powered by one fuel, one of the most elusive fuels of the past several decades, the internal combustion engine has dominated for more than 100 years on highways around the world. The topic has become more and more hydrogen. And as we look out at the history of hydrogen, it's notable that as we bring on our guest for today's show, Justin Ward, who is with Toyota Motor Sales USA out of Torrance, California, which is the headquarters for Toyota in the United States. He is operating out of the Toyota Motor Engineering and Manufacturing Division. Thank you, Justin Ward, for taking time out of your very busy time right now preparing to bring on one of the first production hydrogen vehicles into the United States onto American highways to show us the future. Thanks for joining us and welcome to the Car Guy Show, Justin.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for giving us this opportunity to talk about our fuel cell car.
It's exciting, and here we are in 2013, and I am very confident that in your world, it's 2015, and you're heading toward 2016 and 2017 on the drawing board. If I can only imagine the intense planning and preparation to do what is a paradigm shift for the global motoring community, to go to an incredibly effective fuel for the environment and to make this kind of R&D investment. Hydrogen has been called the fuel of the future that always will be the fuel of the future. And I imagine it must be very exciting for you to talk to your family, friends, and neighbors about the fact that, yeah, we're getting ready to launch hydrogen into 2015. Tell us about how it feels to be overseeing a major operation with others, obviously, at Toyota.
It is really an exciting time right now in the development of fuel cell technology here within Toyota. When I first started with Toyota in 2001, the vehicles were great. They ran really well, but you know, they had lots of limitations. The range wasn't very long. It wasn't able to operate in all the extreme conditions. But fast forward to today, and we have a vehicle now that can perform the same or even in more aggressive climates compared to conventional internal combustion engine vehicles. We have range that is comparable, if not better than, and we're really excited about where this technology is going. Being part of our development team for the past over 10 years now has been really exciting to see these developments occur up in real time. And as you mentioned before, you know, we are planning to launch this vehicle in 2015, and we are committed to that. And you know, if you know about the vehicle development process in an OEM, a typical development process is anywhere from 3 to 5 years.
Right.
And since we're getting close to 2015, you can imagine we are already at the stage of wrapping up the last final bits before we get ready to start production and getting ready for the launch in 15.
That means that you and the other engineers on your team and the R&D people, the PhDs involved with the scientific research and development, troubleshooting and problem solving that it took to get to a point where you said, this is the platform, this is the hardware, this is the technology that's as good as we can get it to be to uphold the standards that people from, you know, would expect from a global automaker who has obviously introduced and helped the world move forward into a hybrid platform and demonstrated the viability and the importance of that as a bridge technology from internal combustion engines. But I think about the Apollo lunar module landing on the moon. Was it a fuel cell that was being used in the Apollo lunar module?
Yes, it was a phosphoric acid-based fuel cell system.
Okay.
And the vehicles today use what we call a PEM, or a proton exchange membrane type fuel cell. Now, the mechanism, how they work is a little bit different, but they still run hydrogen on the anode and oxygen on the cathode.
When the lunar module landed on the moon in 1969 and that big event happened for the world, that was not a long electrical extension cord from Earth. That was hydrogen being extracted from another compound or another, what would you call that, as a compound?
Well, the hydrogen was stored as hydrogen. In the case of the lunar module,
yeah,
they had hydrogen and oxygen stored on board.
Right.
And it ran on each side of kind of the membrane or the cell.
Right.
And then that produced the electricity that ran all the electrical
system.
Subsystems
yeah.
on the
now,
module.
Thank you for your patience on that. I know we're not talking NASA and moon rocket landings, but my point would be, as I know you and your colleagues would appreciate, I want the audience to know that was 1969. Which was, about 43, 44 years ago, demonstrating that hydrogen can be used to get electricity, to power motors, lights, mechanisms, computers, what have you. And now you move that into a motor vehicle. The benchmark is the internal combustion engine, which has been well established, and every technician, every motorist understands oil changes. It used to be tune-ups. Today, there's automatic calibration of systems that need sensors and actuators, you know, spark plugs and O2 sensors and things that are vocabulary for the 21st century to replace the tune-up. Just about the time we're getting familiar with onboard diagnostics, we're now going beyond the hybrid into hydrogen, a whole new level of automotive technology for service technicians, for dealerships, and for consumers. Tell us, if you would, what are going to be the differences? What are the similarities?
You mean specifically from a service point of view? Or?
Well, thank you for clarifying, you know, tightening it a little bit, but I'm thinking we're still going to fuel up at a power station, let's say, or a hydrogen distribution station. There are fewer of them, and we'll come to that. The vehicle is going to be sitting in the showroom next to other Toyota vehicles that are sold today, and they're going to be people, as we know, who are the pioneering buyers, the influentials, the people who are more cutting edge. They want to be the first in their block to own one. How is it going to be for the Toyota organization to market this hydrogen vehicle to existing customers and new customers who might come in the Toyota showroom? What do I need to understand why I would buy the hydrogen vehicle, and why should I be comfortable that it's ready for market, ready for prime time?
As an engineer that's been working on the development of this technology for over 10 years, I can't speak directly to the marketing side, but what I can say is that what we have been doing for the past 10 years is to really work on developing the technology so that it's a seamless transition for the consumer. When the person gets behind the wheel, we don't want them to feel like they're driving a spaceship or they're getting in a helicopter and they have to pull on the yoke to try to steer. We want them to get in the car and it just feel like home when they sit in the vehicle.
Right.
And so you'll notice that even in today's prototype cars, if you get into the FCHV ADV.
When you say FCHV, or if you can give the acronym, that's fuel cell hydrogen vehicle something, I'm imagining. What's FCHV?
Yeah. When I refer to our current prototype vehicle, I was calling it the FCHV ADV, and that stands for Fuel Cell Hybrid Vehicle Advanced.
Got it.
And that represents the latest generation of our FCHV, our fuel cell hybrid vehicles.
Yeah.
The current prototype is called the FCHV ADV.
Yep.
And I forget that maybe I'm the only one that remembers.
No, it's funny. You know, I just have to tell you, listen, I'm not an engineer. I'm an automotive technician by background. But I do know, talking to engineers in the automotive service and education world, deal with the same kind of thing in acronyms. They're more acronyms than ever because things are more, they're longer terms and longer, you know, OBD2 and FCV and all these types of things. TLAs. You know what TLAs are? You're an engineer. You might have heard this one.
Which one is that?
Three-letter acronym. So TLA is your short version. If anyone's tired of the acronym,
say, logistics,
well, yeah, that's one you can buzz around if you haven't heard it already. But I enjoyed that when I did a period in Detroit. It was, we have TLAs. Yeah, three-letter acronyms. So FCV, fuel cell vehicle, is something people can start to get familiar with.
What people will notice right away, though, is that there are some differences. But we think those differences are going to be what people really appreciate about the fuel cell car. One is going to be the noise that it generates is going to be much lower than a conventional car.
Right.
And so, like, in the case of our current prototype, you'll notice the vehicle has a very low hum. It doesn't have a loud roaring engine sound under the hood.
Right, which we'll miss. Some of us, you know, car enthusiasts. It's kind of like a kid putting playing cards, you know, with clothesline, what are they called? You put playing cards in your spokes, attach it so that you have the sound effects of a motorcycle when you ride your bicycle. So when I'm driving a car, I want to hear something, and you're saying it's going to be that silent except for the electric motor, right?
Yeah, you'll have the electric motor, and we do have an air compressor, and we do have to run.
Yep.
The air compressor is used to run air from outside into the fuel cell system.
Got it.
So you will hear that, yep. And that does make sound.
Sure.
So it won't be completely silent.
Thank you.
And then also, you know, there's the heating and air conditioning system, which also will make sound. So if you have the air conditioner on, you're going to hear the fans blowing and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. New sensations. So that's going to be different. If you've driven a hybrid, you've already driven a vehicle that can make no sound while you're backing up or pulling into a parking lot. And that's essentially the sound of an electric vehicle. And I think that's an important point for the audience to understand. By the way, this is not a thing that shoots a hydrogen flame out the back, like the Batmobile.
Oh, yeah.
This is this is an EV vehicle, folks, so you probably mostly know that. But the hydrogen-powered vehicle, it's going to be an electric vehicle with hydrogen as the source of fuel for the electric motor. Fair to say?
Yeah, that's a great clarification.
Yeah,
I think we sometimes forget when we talk about fuel cell cars is just to really clarify that it is really an electric vehicle.
Right.
In all sense of words, except that it has, you know, the ability to go a longer range and fill up faster.
Yeah.
The current prototype vehicle can have, you know, we've done a test with the Department of Energy. We've confirmed it has a range of over 400 miles.
Okay. Which is 300 to 400. Isn't 300 to 400 kind of the threshold that we look at right now with conventional cars? Is that,
I think that, yeah, that's really where you're going to want to see. That's where the cars normally operate in the 300 to 400 mile range.
Right.
And it's really exciting to know that the fuel cell cars are able to get to that operating zone now.
Right.
And that you can fill up in 3 minutes.
I like that. Less. So this vehicle in the showrooms in 2015, I trust that there's going to be an experience driving it off into the street and driving it to compare with a vehicle I might otherwise buy. I might come in for the hydrogen vehicle, or I might come in for a Camry and say, gee, I might just test drive that hydrogen. What's going to be the performance comparison? This is a critical aspect you've inevitably worked for, getting on the freeway, driving around town, having the confidence to drive a long distance from L.A. to San Francisco. Talk about that, if you would.
When you take it off the showroom floor and you drive it around, you will be happy. Remember, it is an electric drive system.
Right.
So its acceleration, especially at low speed to high speed, is very linear. It's got a very nice acceleration. It doesn't have a gearbox that is shifting through, so
right.
You don't have any lags, or it's not bucking you around as it's shifting.
Yep.
So it's got a nice linear acceleration. So then as an electric car, it produces all of its torque at the low RPM.
Okay.
So its drivability is really, really good. Its drivability and response, I think, are going to be really, really impressive. And it's going to be something that really sells the customer, I think, on the first time they touch the pedal. The words that kind of flow through their head is, wow, this is exciting.
Yeah, and the fact that you're under the halo of hydrogen has to be another factor there.
Yep.
Folks will appreciate what level of emissions. Go ahead and tell us what you're putting out the exhaust to remind people.
The fuel cell vehicles are called zero-emission vehicles, so they produce no harmful emissions out the tailpipe. It does produce an emission, and the emission is pure water.
Yeah.
So that's a kind of a great opportunity.
Of course.
I get lots of questions about, is that water going to be a problem? Is it going to cause more humidity in the atmosphere than a conventional car? And kind of the interesting thing is, if you do the math, if you actually break down the gasoline molecule and you figure out how many water parts you're going to make after you combust it, and you look at how much water a fuel cell produces, it's about on par on a horsepower basis.
Yeah.
So the reality is, the amount of water, exiting a tailpipe would be about the same as a conventional car. So you don't need to worry about extra fog or whatever people worry about sometimes when we talk about fuel cell cars.
Yeah, thank you. Folks are going to think about driving across the desert, driving up to the snow. The background I have in understanding some of the proton exchange membrane, the PEM acronym that I think has been used predominantly, left me with the impression over past years that one of the challenges is packaging that fuel cell component, that black box to many people, that thing that is the core of this technology, to handle the increased demands of vibration and harshness that the internal combustion engine has been so robust facing. The fuel cell is sensitive to temperature. Can you tell me and the audience how you've overcome that?
Yeah, well, let me give you a little story here. This may help kind of frame where we are with the technology today. When I first started with Toyota in 2001, the fuel cell stacks were still very sensitive to the cold. In fact, most of the time we were very careful when we shipped the vehicle in temperature-controlled trailers so that when it went over mountain passes, we didn't have to worry about the fuel cell stack being frozen.
Right.
And because, as you had mentioned, there was a concern with water. What happens, basically, is the water freezes inside the fuel cell and actually causes damage.
Right.
Now, that was a problem we had years ago. In the 2003-2004 time frame, we were able to really find a countermeasure for that, and we've been able to eliminate that concern. We were able to get rid of the bulk water so it doesn't freeze and cause damage in the fuel cell. Because of that, now the fuel cell can operate in sub-freezing environments. And the reason I want to stress that is that there was a time when we decided we wanted to get a picture of our fuel cell car under the Aurora Borealis up in northern Canada.
Yeah.
And, of course, you got to put it on a frozen lake when you take this picture, because that's what you think of when you see the Aurora Borealis.
Yeah.
So we decided to ship the fuel cell car up there.
Mm-hmm.
We shipped it up there, but the weather wasn't on our side. It was overcast, and it was on the order of about minus 40, minus 41 average.
That's a test. Yeah.
So that's really cold. The Fahrenheit and Celsius, they intersect at minus 40, right? So it's really cold.
Yeah.
If you spill your coffee, it's going to freeze before it hits the ground. That's how cold it was.
Got it.
And unfortunately, it was cloudy. So the car sat up there for a few weeks. And so what we did is we got a call from the locals, and they said, it's going to clear up, get up here. So we sent the photography team up there. One of the engineers from my team went up there, got his rental car. It was a competitor's SUV. I won't say which one.
Yep.
And when he got to the hotel, he forgot to plug in the block heater. He didn't really think about it because he's just so excited about being up there and getting that picture under the Robo Yacht.
Yeah.
Well, the next morning, they decided, okay, well, let's go stage the car in the lake. And this is where things get interesting.
The block cracked.
They jumped in, they jumped in the fuel cell car. It starts right up.
Yeah.
Now, it didn't have a block heater on it.
Yeah.
It's
didn't
been
need
soaking
one.
At minus 40 for weeks.
Yep.
And then he jumps in his SUV, the internal combustion engine SUV, and it wouldn't crank over because the oil and everything had already frozen.
Exactly. Wow.
And I think that really goes as a testament to where this technology has come.
You have overcome the cold weather issue largely because of a major shift in the engineering or the design. Is that fair to say?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, we can spend a whole show just talking about the advances in water management in a fuel cell.
I love it. That's talk about esoteric stuff. That's a pretty tight topic. I think most of the audience will turn off after about 5 minutes on that one. What were some of the challenges that you and your team faced to develop and optimize that, though? I mean, besides that, obviously you got cold weather. Reliability. You had to do long testing. I mean, did you have people driving around the world 3 million miles or 1 million miles, or is there anything you want the audience to know?
Basically, we know when we bring this vehicle to market, people are going to expect performance comparable with a conventional car.
Right.
But maybe more importantly, they're going to expect performance associated with Toyota and the Toyota brand.
Right.
Right. So we need to make sure that we meet that expectation.
Yeah.
But we've done years and years of durability testing and hundreds and millions of miles of driving, real-world driving, dyno driving, and whatnot.
Yeah.
And one example we have is in our previous demonstration program, we had vehicles operating in both the United States and Japan.
Yeah.
And they operated, you know, they had millions of miles between the two operations. But what we noticed when we got the fuel cells back and we did a teardown and a study of them is that the stacks in the U.S. were going for about 300,000 miles.
Right.
And the stacks in Japan were doing about 100,000 miles.
Hmm.
So at first blush, there's some people that said, oh, well, that's good. It's over 100,000 miles.
Right.
But from an engineer's point of view, we said, well, that's bad because there's a difference.
Yes.
Why is there a difference between U.S. and Japan?
It needs some analysis.
It needs an analysis.
Yeah.
And so what we did is we dug into that, and what we discovered was the operating conditions are different. Maybe it's the obvious answer, right? But there's the operating conditions are very different. In Japan, it's low speed, stop and go.
Yeah.
In U.S., it tends to be more
highway.
Regular driving.
Yeah. Or we have freeways and lots of open road.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so what we found out was there was a degradation mode associated with when the fuel cell stopped.
Right.
So when the fuel cell's not providing power, we just stop it and it sits there just by itself not doing anything, right?
Right.
It's in that timing that there was some degradation that was happening.
Yeah.
And the reason why Japan's fuel cells were having less mileage was because that happened more often.
Stop and go.
The stopping.
Yeah.
And so being able to see that data, we were able to really understand the degradation mode and then come up with a countermeasure that really improves the fuel cell stack life overall.
Good. So there's the durability.
It's definitely improved durability. And it's also probably another topic we can spend the whole show on.
You know, I'm starting to, there you go. There's the next esoteric. Five people in the audience will join us. I can see where the automobile service market must just be very, very interested in getting ready for this rollout. And certainly, first and foremost, your frontline service technicians in the Toyota dealerships. For you rolling out a 2015 hydrogen-powered vehicle, you've got approximately how many dealers that have to be prepared to start to be familiar with these vehicles, just in general? How many dealers?
A total U.S. I think we have something on the order of 1,200 dealers. But when it comes to launching the vehicles, what we have to understand is they do run on hydrogen.
Right.
And because they run on hydrogen, they're really only going to be able to be launched in places where there's a hydrogen station.
Oh, I see. You're addressing that immediately. It's not like you're going to send these out into the wilderness. You're going to be sure.
Yeah.
So I guess that makes California obviously a great state, since Arnold Schwarzenegger was involved with the Hydrogen Highway and promoting it. We're going to be pioneering this in California perhaps more than any other place in the world? Or is there another state?
I think California is definitely a leader in the hydrogen infrastructure development. There's there's a multitude of stations that are in operation today.
Yeah.
Of course, I can note the first ever pipeline applied hydrogen station that's we did with or that Shell Hydrogen did in partnership with us in Air Products. in Torrance. But California definitely is definitely going to be one of the leaders. But it's not the only location across the globe. Europe, yeah. Especially Germany, has been very active hydrogen stations.
Thank you.
And Japan.
Yeah, great. Elsewhere in the United States, it's not going to be quite as prominent, I understand. And I think we have, is it 70 or how many, what are we going to have in 2015 approximately of hydrogen stations?
If you look at the California Fuel Cell Partnership, we call it the CAFCP, they developed a hydrogen station roadmap.
Right.
And the roadmap defines 68 stations in operation by the end of 2015.
Okay.
The 68 station is kind of key because it provides coverage across the likely deployment zones within California and gives enough hydrogen station coverage that people can drive, you know, to their vacation destinations.
So from San Diego to San Francisco, basically, is what you're saying, or points north of San Francisco, or just pretty much that corridor?
If you look at the partnership map, it shows everything from all the way down to San Diego, all the way up in the South Lake Tahoe.
Okay.
And all in between San Francisco, Los Angeles.
So I'm thinking
we covered the key areas.
Your guilt-free driving guide includes this vehicle, right?
Does that mean we're on track for 68 stations? We're not confident yet we're going to have 68 stations at the end of 2015.
Yep.
But the California Energy Commission is working very hard to issue, they have a bunch of solicitations out, are going to go out to talk about putting in hydrogen infrastructure.
Okay.
So there's still room to fill the gap between where we are today and where we need to be.
It's a projection, and it's yet to be done, so it's TBD how many will be there.
Yep.
But a substantial number, you won't launch the vehicle in with one fuel station in Torrance and you find your way after that. And
we can't do that to the customer. Yeah.
Hey, safety with the hydrogen vehicle. I just think in a wind down here, people might think about the images of the Hindenburg, and I know that's so cliche, but that's far beyond from what I've gathered in past understanding of the hydrogen fuel cell technology, that this is a highly specialized preparation and installation into an automobile. It has really very little likelihood of anything close to the incidents that people have had associated with the negative side of hydrogen.
We get questions a lot about, you know, what about the hydrogen tank? Isn't it just, you know, what happens if there's an accident?
Yeah. What happens?
Well, one of the examples I like to give people is that, you know, there's a, when we do certifications of the tank, we have to do a penetration test.
Right.
And the purpose of the penetration test is that you need to penetrate the skin of the tank, and then the tank cannot explode.
Right.
It's got to stay structurally sound.
Right.
And when we were at 5,000 PSI, people were using, the testing lab, they're using a rifle shell called a 30-06.
Right.
For those of us that know about rifles, that's a very high powerful bullet.
Yeah.
When we moved to 10,000 PSI or 70 megapascal, the 30-06s were bouncing off the skin, and they had to move to 50 calibers to penetrate, or armor-piercing bullets to penetrate the tank.
Yeah.
And that really shows how strong these tanks are. They're actually probably one of the strongest things on the road today. And we've done massive collisions testing, very extreme collision testing, and what we've shown in every case is the tanks, they may get pushed forward or they get moved off to the side, but we always have mechanisms to shut off the hydrogen in case of any accident. The shut valves are inside the tank.
Yep.
So no matter if the hydrogen lines are sheared off or cut off,
I follow. Yeah, because that's my next question is how about the rest of the system? And its default, I'll bet you its default is closed.
Yes, it's a normally closed valve. So
thank
power
you.
Is cut off.
Thank you. Thank
It'll
you.
Shut it right down.
I feel much better. Let's go take a test drive. So Justin, we're only a clock stroke from 2015. Do you have any name or pricing information yet, or is this all stuff we're going to stand by for with bated breath?
I think you're going to have to stand by.
Okay.
We're real excited. We're getting close to that time where those decisions are being made.
Yeah.
And it's really going to be exciting. We're really excited about the launch of this car and look forward to seeing how the market responds.
Well, I'm so glad to be asking that question and finding out you don't say, well, didn't you hear about it? It's been out for a year. I want to be on the cutting edge. So if I can say to the audience, we can't get that yet, then we know we're early. And that's what I wanted to do. Justin Ward, General Manager, Powertrain System Control from Toyota USA. If you're curious to learn more about the future and hydrogen that is the fuel of not forever the future, it's coming your way in 2015 at a showroom nearby, www.toyota.com/ESQ, and there's a button there on that page for advanced vehicles or advanced technology vehicles. Is that correct, Justin?
That's correct.
So www.toyota.com/ESQ, look for a button that refers to advanced vehicles and technology in that area, And you can study more about this and stay on the cutting edge yourself. So we thank you, Justin, for your expertise and your insight and your time and continued success with this. It is exciting. And thanks for being on board on the Car Guy Show.
Thank you very much for this chance.
And thank all of you for joining us for this segment on the World of Wheels. And this brings us to the close of another visit with all of you here on the Car Guy Show. Join us here again next week for another segment from the Coastal Riviera, right here in Santa Barbara on News Talk 990 KTMS. Keeping you car wise, I'm Steve Ford, the Car Guy.